Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, so we'll start our second session now, inshallah, and then hopefully for some time afterwards, then we'll have time for question and answers. We're only going to have one session. I'm going to try and cover as much of the material that I can, but if there are questions afterwards, then I'd be happy to take those questions. So I mentioned that the things that I'm mentioning are basic emotional needs for our spouse. Just because they're not important to us and we don't feel the emotional need doesn't mean we should trivialize these things and say, well, this is not important to me as a man or a woman, and must not be important to the other person, or vice versa. Okay, so now one of those basic needs of a man. Actually, men do need their wives to take care of them at home and have the home in order, all the domestic support. You know, that when you come home, the house is in order, wife's looking good, kids are under control, everybody comes to meet them, you know, the smell of good food waiting at the door. These are all, you know, like a male dream. You know, come home, have this. So, let me just quote you a hadith now. There was a man who started to describe his wife to the Prophet of Allah. He said that, I have a wife who, when I come home, she meets me at the door. Not just, you know, when I leave the house, she actually walks me to the door. Some wives will do that. They'll walk their husband to the door, even though they've been married for 20 years, give him a kiss on the cheek, expect you to do well at work, whatever, let him go. Not just, so when I come to the house, she meets me at the door. When I leave the house, she walks me to the door. If she sees me worried, she says, why are you worried? She says, if you're worried about your risk, your money, provision, then someone other than you is taking care of that. I must come more down. There's some people who distract one another from Allah by being so scared and worried about what's going to happen and the finances and these things. We scare one another. We're supposed to only have fear for Allah, but we scare one another instead of reminding one another of the promises of Allah. But there's other people like this woman who instead she would tell her husband, Allah's going to provide. You have to work, yeah, these things, but Allah's taking care of your risk. Relax. She would calm her husband down. So that if you're worried about your hereafter, may Allah increase you in worry. She's trying to help her husband out spiritually. That if the reason you're worried is for violating Allah's law, not doing your responsibility, yeah, that's something we should all be worried about. May Allah increase you in worry. When the Prophet of Allah heard this description, he said that, tell her that she has the good tidings of paradise, and that every day she's getting the reward of 70 shaheed. One of these things that we consider small. Hazrat Fatima, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, worked in the house. You know that she and the middle mu'mineen went to the Prophet and they asked, how should we divide up work amongst ourselves? Slightly different than the works, but this is what the Ahlul Bayt say. If we want to follow their way. He said, what's outside the door is for Ali. What's inside the door is for you. And Hazrat Fatima was so happy with this division of labor. So the housework, let's say that, yes, even though we know that it's not wajib, it's not obligatory, it's not something I have to do, it is something which has great reward and is the seerah of the daughter of the Prophet of Allah. So we advise Muslim sisters that yes, you do the housework in the house. Let's not change the rules. A stay-at-home dad, work all day mom. Let's follow the natural order. So inside the house is the woman's responsibility. It's not wajib, and there's a reason why it's not wajib. This thing I want the brothers to listen to carefully. If you're someone, remember we talked before about the idea of listing everything that my spouse does right, and the reasons I should love my spouse. One of the things that you can do if you want to be successful in your marriage is to remember that it's not obligatory for your wife to cook or clean or iron your clothes or cook your food or laundry or anything. So then every day you realize your wife is showing you love by doing these things. It's not her job, her responsibility in that way that you take her for granted. What happens is that after marriage, people take their spouses for granted. They don't think about the good that you're doing, what it will be like. And, no, this is what your job is. Whereas a smart person, a believer, would say that, okay, look, none of these things, my wife every day is showing me love by going above and beyond what she has to do. So I would say that it is the instructions, right? She does it out of love, not doing it because of things, and they have great reward for doing these things. Picking up even the small things, even if she gives her husband a drink of water, if she moves anything inside her house, I think I did for something like this, that a lot, if she moves something inside her house to straighten up her house, Allah will look at her with a look of mercy, whoever he looks at, that he will not punish, like heavy, heavy reward for this, in addition to it being the seerah of the daughter of the Prophet of Allah. So a lot of reward for it. The other thing I would mention is that helping out in the house for our brothers is something that the Prophet did. He would help out with chores in the house. Say Imam Ali used to sweep, he would bring in water. The Prophet of Allah would help out in the chores of his wife. Imam Khomeini was like this. He was like this because he took these hadith of the Prophet Abu Bakr really seriously. His wife said that if he saw me with a broom in my hand or trying to do some work, he would try and do it. I had to wait till Imam Khomeini would leave the house to get to do the housework. Because if he saw, he would try and help out. He really, he's Imam Khomeini. I'm not saying be like Imam Khomeini, but helping out in the house, you know, realizing that she doesn't have to do these things, helping out if we can, even if it's something small. And for our sisters, just a trick. Not a trick, no, the brothers are right here, but something to keep in mind. What happens a lot in some households is that the husband will help out in the house, do the dishes one night, he'll do something. But the wife normally feels he should be doing more. So instead of appreciating what he just did, you need to take out the garbage too. Instead of appreciating. Whereas if she would show love to him, you're my hero. Thank you. Really? Thank you, a big hug and a kiss, man. That guy would straighten up his shoulder. Really wanted to, seriously, the sisters might, they might laugh. They're like, men are simple. I'm telling you, you show physical rewards and happiness, appreciation. Your husband, he wants to please you and make you happy. That's what gives him motivation for life. It is, maybe sisters don't know this, right? When you come home and your wife is happy, when you feel like, we have the hadith, right? The person who struggles to provide for his family is like a mujahid fi sabilillah. Now when the husband comes home and he's able to do those things, he feels like a champion. If he's appreciated, he's doing it for the sake of Allah, inshallah. When you appreciate it, man, takes it to a whole nother level. So we want to make sure that we do that. This is another one that I'm going to mention is a little bit touchy, but inshallah everybody will bear with me here. In the West, we have the idea of women working. And sometimes what happens, because Islam doesn't forbid it, men expect their wives to bring home their share of the money. You bring home your 40%. But statistics have shown that married women who feel obligated to work, I have to bring home my 60%. Sometimes they resent it, causes problems in their home. People might think this is old-fashioned, but women, when they get married, they want to be taken care of. What I advise couples to do, because it's the right of the wife to be provided for. It's her right. If it's her right, and if it's obligatory on us, that means we can do it. Sometimes, no, I can't do it unless we have two salaries. If Allah made it obligatory, you can do it. So what I encourage brothers to do is, if she wants to work, if you allow her to work, she needs your permission even to leave the house. Right? If you allow her to work, you guys budget to live on one salary. That money she has, she can be Hazrat Khadija with it. She can give it to you, she can put it for the kids, whatever. But you guys budget to live on one salary. If she's going to work, and sisters, I want you to hear this. If you're going to work, don't make it so that you work so hard you cannot perform your other duties in Islam. Those other things which are necessary for you to do. I'm working so hard, I don't even have time to smile at my husband when I come home. I work one shift, come home to the other shift, drop into bed, it's a janaza. So exhausted, working 2 hours. Or I don't spend any time with my children. My children are raised by a nanny or somebody else. Put him in front of the television. Put him in school. Do something. Get him out of my life. No. Raise your own children. If it comes to sacrifice, I'm telling you, a lot of people were real successful. Later on in their life, they feel a lot of regret. One of those regrets is, I don't invest in my children. My children, the physical looks of a woman affect a man. Women would champion modesty. Women would champion modesty. There's a reason why Allah put the hijab in place. A reason why we're not so free in our interactions. We don't laugh. We don't joke. We don't try and break down those barriers. We try and keep that barrier. Yes, we can interact in a professional manner. We don't want to be close friends. We want to keep ourselves away from the opposite sex, except the areas that it's necessary, and then behave in a professional manner. And the more we observe this, the more dependent we'll be on our spouse, and the more we will enjoy our spouse. So we definitely want to do that. So if we're going to watch a movie, I was asking the office of Ayatollah Khamenei one time. So normally when you watch a movie, then there'll be something in the movie that'll be a little bit inappropriate, some scene or whatever. So they said, just fast forward that, or don't look at that. It's not that I can't see any movies, no. But there's a certain scene. You could be watching it with your wife, right? See this part of the movie? Okay, that's inappropriate. Make sure you look away. Okay, it's safe now. So we're going to be really careful about that. The next one is your physical appearance. This is again one of those that has to be done consistently from the beginning of the marriage till the end of the marriage. Taking care of our physical appearance. I'll start with the brothers. One time, one of the companions saw the imam, or he saw the imam, and he saw that the imam had dyed his beard. So he's, "May I be your ransom? You dyed your beard?" The imam said that when you take care of your physical appearance, this increases in the chastity of women. We have another hadith that they say that the women of Bani Israel abandon chastity because their husbands abandon taking care of their physical appearance. Normally what happens is before we get married, because we're trying to attract the girl, we'll go, we'll work out, lift weights, keep ourselves sharp. But then once we get married, our physical appearance, we may let it go down. Our personal hygiene, sisters have complained about these things. Not sisters, I mean, across the board, right? Some men have disgusting personal habits. You know, they're used to it from their single days, you know. Yeah, I pass gas in front of the guys. Ha! Sisters, really disgusting. Not brushing teeth, not being physically, you know. So we should be maintaining that always after the marriage. The imams would, you have in times that one of the people came in to see the imam, and he saw the imam was in a red outfit. This. He said, yeah, my wife, I have a wife, and she likes to see me in this outfit. To the extent that the imam, like one person came and saw the imam, he was like really looking good. He had brought a new person in to become Shia. And he said, come back on another day, right? Because the imam was looking so good. The guy started to doubt, how can the imam be an abid and zahid? He's over there taking care of. So I'm not talking about going to extremes, right? But you would expect the imam is sitting there with like a woolen cloak on. And just... So he told him to bring him back in another day. So that day I was with that wife, and she liked me to be in that man. So we want to be doing that. We want to make sure we do exercise after marriage. People do exercise before they get married, but to be consistently exercising after marriage. Imam Khomeini was like, three times a day he would be walking. Allama Tabatabai would be doing horseback riding. He was good with, actually, with weapons. Allama Tabatabai. I mean, they ought to be. So the other Urafa were something advising people. Let me take that one back. But the idea of exercise, I asked the spiritual teachers, they said exercise is good for everyone. The Prophet of Allah was actually physically fit, and they said that the Prophet of Allah would walk, he could tell that he wasn't lazy or weak. So that exercise and maintaining the physical appearance. Okay. For our sisters also, we were talking about exercise. Right? For our sisters also, the idea of exercising after marriage is important. They've done statistics. They said what men found most attractive about women, I think it was the highest on the list of attraction, was having an athletic body. It doesn't mean you have to be super skinny or anything like that, no. But being physically fit, that's something everybody can do. Actually, most men prefer women to be a little bit rounder and softer than what the West shows when they've done statistics. But physically fit, that's something that So that needs to be there and to be consistently exercising after you get married. It's so, let the sisters in on a little secret. Men are so happy if they hear after you get married that you want to exercise, and oh wow, I'll take out my credit cards. Oh, you're going to a gym? Can I wash the kids a little? It's such a huge thing. If you will exercise, tell her, I'm going to exercise. I want to make sure I stay fit. I look good for you. Man. So sisters, letting go of your appearance, you know, it was important to exercise before. Now, anybody, everybody should be exercising. We need this. So inshallah, you guys get the next Islamic Center of Sunnah. There's going to be a facility for the sisters and stuff like that. Support. That was a facility for the sisters to exercise without compromising their values. Since we're talking about physical appearance now, let me talk a little bit about how important it is for a woman to maintain her physical appearance after marriage. The first thing that I would say about, before I get to physical appearance, is about being beautiful on the inside. Having taqwa and akhlaq. Beautiful on the inside. Being woman. There are some hadith which explain, verses of Quran, this is Surah 33 and verse 32, that is talking to the wives of the Prophet. Okay? And it says, O wives of the Prophet, you are not like other women. If you are wary of Allah, if you have taqwa of Allah, and you fear God, then don't be soft in your speech, lest he in whose heart is sickness lust after you, and speak honorable words. So the instruction is, when I'm talking to a non-mahram, then yes, I'm firm in my speech. I don't want to talk and be womanly and be soft. But it doesn't mean I'm never soft. I talk to my husband and says, yes, husband, businesslike. No, there's some women who practically purr when they talk. And when a man hears it. So being soft, being womanly. Right? Some women, they know how to do this. All women know how. But they're just so abrupt inside their personal lives. They kind of like, they talk to their husband like he's a small boy. Talk down to him, nag him, tell him how it is. Instead of being womanly and soft and sweet, and using those nice words. So all of those things are part of being beautiful. Being soft and sweet, using those nice words, you know. Flirt with your husband. So that's one part. That's being beautiful on the outside with the akhlaq, present akhlaq, and then the taqwa of Allah, fear of God. But the other thing is taking care of the actual physical appearance. Now this one, again, because remember I said these points, they're backed up by statistics. The male brain is different to the female brain. Most men are visually oriented. What a woman does or doesn't do with her physical appearance affects how the man feels about her. What goes on in some men's, because women don't take it as seriously because they don't think of their husband, they want their husband to be looking good and stuff like that, but they don't, it's not as serious. For men, this is like a basic emotional need. If this isn't going to happen, God knows what happened. This is what happens to the men. The men say that if their wife doesn't take care of her appearance, they're emotionally bothered. 7 out of 10 men are emotionally bothered. They say, if my wife cared about me, she would take care of her physical appearance. If she loved me, it would be important. She's not doing it must because she doesn't care about me. Normally, when I go for consultation, one of the first things that I tell a sister is, take care of your physical appearance. Oh, you're doing that? Okay, more of that. Go all out. Dress up. Look good. Right? So what happens is sometimes women, after they get married, then I can relax, right? I go home and I put on my house clothes. I always look like mom. Right? Husband comes home. Oh, great, mom's here. And you know what everybody, you know how the women dress outside. It's cold, they're supposed to be looking down, avoid, right? So everybody outside, televisions, billboards, you know how much she has an emotional need to see an attractive woman? I come home and my wife doesn't even shave her legs. She's got a mustache. Some women don't even bother to comb their hair. This is Muslims, non-Muslims, sweaty sweatpants, you know, t-shirts. How are those things girlish, you know? No. So this is a problem, you know. Women should always be, from the beginning of their marriage till the end of their marriage, always looking good. Every every time their husband sees them. Remember I said consistency? Every time your husband sees them. Let me quote some of the hadith. The best of your women is, there's many traits, al-mutabarraja ma'a ahliha. The woman who dresses up when her husband is there. This is one of the hadith here. It says that, and she is chaste when her husband is away. Another one of the hadith here, it says that it is her duty to wear her best perfume, best clothing, best jewelry, and present herself to her husband morning and evening. Now the funny thing about this is that women have a deep emotional need to be appreciated and to know that they're beautiful. That also is there, and that's why I always give brothers instructions that, brothers, give compliments. If your wife makes a little effort to dress up and look good, don't tell your wife you look fine unless you're going to say, fine. Let her know. As soon as she comes in, let her know. You show her your eyes. Yeah, mashallah, wow. So the thing is that this physical dressing up is so important. This is in the hadith now. It can even save a marriage that's about to fall apart. Remember I said that it was supposed to be done in morning and evening? So every day, I am dynamite when my husband comes home. Dynamite. Okay? It's so important. It can even, if a woman has abandoned this principle of the afterlife, it can save a broken marriage. Let me read you the hadith. We have hadith from Imam Bakr and Imam Sadiq. That if a woman is... They say if a woman gets divorced from her husband, woman gets divorced and she's in her waiting period. You know, Islamically, when you get divorced and you're in your waiting period, your husband's not supposed to force you out. You do it the opposite, right? You got married, go back to your parents. Islamically, what should be happening? She should be in the house of the husband. Okay, what should she do while she's in the house of the husband? This is the hadith now. It says that al-mutallaqa, the woman who's been divorced, she should wear kohl. You know what kohl is? She should wear kohl. And henna. She should wear clothes, or she should use perfume, and wear whatever clothing she wants. Right? And just present herself to her husband. Just walk back and forth. Absolutely gorgeous, and see if this man can resist. This is what I'm talking about, a broken marriage, right? They're divorced, he's in there, right? Just see if this guy can resist. Just walk back and forth and just, you know, just as gorgeous as you want to be. Whatever clothing or not clothing you want to wear, just walk back and forth. The hadith says this, perhaps Allah will create something in his heart even at that stage. And the marriage can be saved. If there's a smart believer woman, and she realizes how important this principle is, she would do that 24/7. Always gorgeous and dynamite. She needs to be appreciated. Remember, if you're doing this, you're doing this for yourself because you have a need inside. If the Prophet of Allah said this, it's not that I'm doing this so my husband can benefit. No, I have a need to be beautiful and be appreciated. So for the brothers, we have the verse of Quran that ta'awwanu ala al-birri wa taqwa. Assist one another with righteous, when it comes to righteousness and taqwa. So if you see your wife is making those efforts, those compliments, it's not shirk, you know. No, I can't give you a compliment, because give her the compliment, let her know, you encourage her, and for the sisters to do that. Now, one thing that happens is that sometimes sisters do make this effort to be beautiful. They spend a lot of money on jewelry and clothing and these things, but they don't dress according to their husband's taste. So I go and I dye my hair, for instance. Does my husband like that color? Does he like that hairstyle? I'm going and spending money and buying clothing. And who are you trying to be beautiful for? You look at the fatwa now of the ulama. If there is something your husband finds unattractive about your appearance and he asks you to change that, it's wajib shara'an to change that. You got to look good for him. Wajib. Yahlubayt, they're putting emphasis on it. You've got to look good for this guy. So it's difficult because shaitan will come in, oh no, it's not important. Let me go read Dua Kumail. The kids are around. Let the kids see that mom dresses up for the husband. No, my kids will become a psychopath. If I wear a miniskirt, they'll become a psychopath. Your kids won't become a psychopath if you wear a miniskirt in the house. It's okay. Isn't psychopath? Wear miniskirts, high heels, dress up. Let the kids see that. Let the kids grow up. Yeah, when daddy comes home, mommy looks good. Let's do it. The other thing that we want to keep in mind is that being attractive means working with what you have. And secret I should let the sisters in on is that men love women with average, ordinary bodies. We don't have, no, if I don't look, sometimes look at the movie star, I don't look like that. So a lot of women have, and for brothers, be careful with your daughters, right? Your daughters may have deep insecurity about how they look because I don't fit in with that role model. How they say I should look. Especially some of us from the Middle East, you know, white people, right? They're attractive. I'm not. So you find a lot of insecurity. But the good news is, men like women with attractive bodies, if you, or not attractive, with average bodies, if you make effort, Allah's going to help you. You're making that effort for the sake of Allah to be dressed up, to look good. You're exercising, you do that. See if Allah doesn't assist you. You make that effort, see if Allah doesn't assist you, if you're not able to turn your marriage around. So, keep that in mind and make sure that we find that important. Another thing that's important is the intimate relationship in the marriage. This is, again, one of those issues that normally, across the board, Muslim, non-Muslim, is ignored after marriage. After marriage. Amongst some Christians, they actually think that the intimate relationship is a bad thing. Jesus Christ was never like that. That's not the Islamic perspective. Quote you this verse of Quran. This is Surah 23, and it's verses 5 and 6. وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ لِفُرُوجِهِمْ حَافِظُونَ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ أَزْوَاجِهِمْ أَوْ مَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُهُمْ فَإِنَّهُمْ غَيْرُ مَلُومِينَ. Those who protect their private parts, except on their spouses or that which their right hands possess, for surely they are not to be blamed. Feeling guilty about that, that's animal, that's bad. We shouldn't, that's not the Islamic concept. Let me read some hadith about this issue. There was a famous hadith that we've all heard of where three men come and they complain to the Prophet of Allah that my husband is not eating meat, my husband is not having intimate relationships with me, my husband is not using perfume. They say the Prophet was so upset, he came out dragging his cloak, went to the member, what's wrong with these people? I do these things. Whoever turns away from my sunnah is not from me. So that's one that we know about. So it's mustahab whenever the wife wants it. You have the hadith that this is sadaqah. Your sins are forgiven. If you have an intimate relationship, your sins are forgiven. Other hadiths that it's the greatest physical pleasure. So now, some of the things that we should keep in mind, and these are for our sisters to keep in mind, and after that we'll get to our brothers. First of all, responding to our husband's needs and demands is wajib shara'an. If I'm not doing that, I'm not a good Muslim, I'm committing sin. This is from Fatwa of Imam Khomeini now, and Ayatollah Khamenei. Ayatollah Sistani is a similar, we can look up Ayatollah Sistani. If a woman is married permanently to her husband, she must provide him with whatever sexual pleasure he wants and not prevent him from having intercourse with her if he asks. That's the fatwa. Wajib. And it's difficult for women. Normally after marriage, sex goes down. Normally. So, now, what happens is that men's minds and women's minds are different. Normally, women feel loving, they need to feel loved in order to desire sex. Men feel loving after that. So wife might not want to respond. Why? Because I don't, but if we're both, if you want to be successful in marriage, you get more by giving than you do by hoarding. Do what your responsibility is, and that'll be a lot better. This helps struggling relationships though. So number one, never refuse. Refusing the husband, When they've done studies with men, it's like telling the man you don't love him. The man's asking his wife, do you love me? And what would it be like if the wife was to tell him that, you know, or the husband, wife asks her husband, do you love me? And he's like, well, she's like, well, Thursday, inshallah. You wouldn't like that. She wouldn't mind. The men, they feel rejected, not that you're rejecting sex, but they're rejecting them. So it really hurts if a wife refuses. So the hadith says that even if you're on the back of a camel, don't refuse. The next one is never delay. There's someone, okay, but I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do the other. Right? We have hadith now. That a woman came to the Prophet of Allah, and then she was talking about some particular issue. He said, maybe you're one of the musawwifan. She said, what are the musawwifan? He said, it's the woman who, her husband calls her, he wants her, and she will go over and start delaying, maybe making salah, do this and the other, delay, right? No, respond immediately. Your husband wants you, come to your husband immediately. The other thing is that your husband wants to be wanted in the bedroom. Not that you just lie back and what, do whatever you want. No, he wants to be wanted. 86% of men said if the wife behaved in that manner, they would feel disgusted. They want to be wanted by their wives. The hadith is this. The best of your women are the women who are chaste and lusty. That's the Islamic perspective. Not that, oh, this is disgusting, this is animal, this is... No. Be actively involved with this. So behaving girlishly outside of the bedroom is also important. There's a hadith that says that it's not allowed for a woman to go to sleep unless she has removed her clothing, come under her husband's wet blanket, and then pressed herself to her husband. If she does that, and he doesn't want anything, then she's done her duty, to that extent. So now, for sisters, remember I mentioned the idea of dressing according to his taste, for the brothers going shopping with your wives, so if you pick out the clothes that you want them to have. And the hadith says this, the best of your women are the women who, when they're alone with their husband, they cast off the armor of shyness. And then once they put their clothing back on, they put that armor back on again. So that's the Islamic perspective. Now, brothers can help out in this also, both with the physical appearance thing and also in the intimate relationship. One of them is that for the physical appearance, right? A lot of times the reason that women don't feel like dressing up and taking care of that basic emotional need is because of how exhausted they are. So if the husband can help out with the homework, putting the kids to bed, letting the wife have a chance to relax, shower. But some of the scholars suggested, these Urafa, they said that give your wife one day in the week when she's not your wife or the kid's mother. A little time during the week she can just go out and be a girl. A little time to just relax. When we come home, remember the seerah of Amir al-Mu'mineen about actually helping out inside the house, or put the kids to bed, help out. Allow the wife a little time to relax and dress up and feel like a woman again. She's been harried all day, dealing with really small children. Realizing that this is a need for them, right? Then the compliments and those things. So I had some other hadith about that, but I'll leave that. For the women, again, this is back to the intimate relationship and then what the brother is supposed to do. So what we're talking about for the women is sexual surrender to their husbands, whatever their husbands want. Verse of Quran is Surah 2, and it's verse number 223. Okay. To learn how to be better at it, instead of just being relaxing with their thing, no. And if your husband, sometimes happens, the husband wants this a lot, if the sisters find that, then initiate sometimes. Regular intervals, you'll find that their relationship will become balanced. For the brothers, then the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt again on this issue, one is not rushing the sister. We already talked about being kind and loving, because until she feels loved and kind, that you've been kind to her, then she's not going to really feel in the mood for that. So being kind, we talk about being consistently like that, complimenting, loving, what we call non-sexual touching and hugging, maybe an example. What happens is that sometimes men come home, they would like to be intimate with their wives, and because for a man, you go from 1 to 60 very quickly, you come over, you want to hold her hand, grope her, and bismillah. And that doesn't work for the sister. The sister, she needs to feel love. So part of that is you being loving and caring. The other part is touching, but not you want something. You just came to hold your hand, give you a hug, talk to you. So I'll give you the hadith now. The hadith is this, that if a man comes and holds his wife's hand, this her hand, then he gets 10 good deeds and 10 sins erased. If he really wants to be a soldier of the Imam, he gives her a peck on the cheek, 100 good deeds and 100 sins are erased. So that non-sexual touching, making the wife feel loved inside the house, all of those things are important. And then after that, the issue of foreplay and taking time, not rushing. We have in the hadith that not being like the bird. A lot of hadith, women have needs. Take your time with them. Don't rush with them. So, all of those are important. Now, there's another issue which is different to the West. Different to the common culture, but this one is also very important. It's the idea of ghairat, or jealousy. Not jealousy as in suspicion, I think you're doing something bad, but protective jealousy, ghira. Men are supposed to have this. In the West, men don't have ghira. They're taught not to. They're taught that somebody wants to come and shake your wife's hand, somebody wants to come over and speak to her, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you're a liberated man and a good man, then this shouldn't bother you. Whereas the Islamic perspective is quite the opposite. I'm not talking about being suspicious though, and my wife is up to no good. I'm not talking about that. But that protective jealousy, I'm looking out to defend my wife, not to put her into difficulties, that's there. Let me read you the hadith. A group of people came to assassinate the Prophet of Allah. It's three people, team of hitmen, and they were captured. When they were captured, several of them were executed, and one of them was let go. The one who was let go asked the Prophet of Allah, he said, "Why did you let me go?" He says that surely in you are five traits which Allah likes and I like. He says one of them is al-ghayratu shadida ala haramik. You have this great jealousy over your wife and children. You're generous. You have pleasant akhlaq. You tell the truth and you're brave. When the man heard this, he became a Muslim, was excellent in his Islam, and was finally murdered. So for our Muslim brothers, and we want to train this in our boys from the time they're young, right? That we want to let our wives know, I would die for you. Yes, I am jealous over you. I know how beautiful you are. Sometimes when I see brothers, because normally when you go to give a lecture, just people encourage you, oh, please brother, go and talk about hijab and stuff like that. Sometimes you don't have the jur'at, the boldness to actually do this. You feel like addressing the brothers. How is it? You know your wife's gorgeous. How do you let your wife walk around without hijab? How could you see her hair out? Doesn't bother you? Muslim men have to be trained that no, jealousy. Jealousy is important. The wife needs to know you find her valuable. You appreciate her. So the hadith says that ghayrat is from iman when it comes to men. Ibrahim, my father, was ghayur, and I am more jealous than he is. Now, the other thing though, the flip side of this, is that women aren't supposed to have ghayrat. And in the West, women are encouraged to have ghayrat over their husbands. The hadith say that ghayrat for a woman is kufr. Ghayrat for a woman is kufr. Now, I'm not encouraging people, and the scholars don't encourage men to do anything which upsets the jealousy of their wives. There's some men who make the mistake of joking, oh yeah, I'm going to go out, I'm going to make a muta, I'm going to get married again, I'm going to do this, and they make life hell for themselves and their wife. Instead of the wife feeling secure in the marriage, she's worried, because women, this is a tough issue for them. So I don't encourage, and the scholars don't, they say you're making a mistake, trying, you know, even if they're, I'm not going to get married, but you have to admit, and you have to say that if I want to get married again, I can. Say it. Men go over it. It's just a sickness, right? The guy comes over and he's just trying to get the wife. Say that I can. You're not going to do it. You're old, 50 years old. What are you talking about? No, say I. So I don't encourage that. to tease your wife about the Ayatollah Khamenei. I says, don't do anything, men or women, that would get your spouse, make your spouse jealous by the way you're behaving. Neither one of them are supposed to do it. But at the same time, is the wife supposed to be jealous over her husband? Checking out, I'll make sure you come home at night. Who are you talking to? Remember we talked the idea of men being men? Feel strong, feel good. This is what Lama Tuwatuwai says. He says, because a man can marry again, this puts his heart at ease. If you rob that from, now I'm going to make a contract, you will never. You're robbing him of that little means. He knows he can't do it. He can't afford it. The West, he'll never do it. He just feels like a man. You know, throw his shoulders back. Yeah, I could if Allah gave me the opportunity. Don't fight that. Don't kill that. You're not a man. No, no, men, you don't know what that does. Just the idea that you can marry again for a man makes him, that's fine. I'm a man. Yeah. There's some men who get so browbeaten by their wives. We've seen this happen. That, one time this happened to a brother. They went to a brother's house and his wife was away. So they're teasing him and stuff like, oh yeah, your wife's away, so you're going to go and get married again, huh? We're going to make a temporary marriage. The guy was so scared of his wife, he started looking like this with his wife. Another country! I don't do anything. Let him feel like a man. No, yeah, that's right. If I wanted to, I could. Let him feel. Don't fight. That don't try and take away that. No, he should be jealous. You shouldn't be jealous. Be confident in yourself. Don't take away that. Let me say a little bit of something also about the in-laws, because this is sometimes a problem and an issue. What happens is that I had a chance to speak to some of our senior ulama. And what happens, what I've noticed in some communities, is there's a tendency, and this came from back before, that when you get married, you live in the same house as your parents. You get married, you live in the same house as your parents. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, and actually there's more thawab for that. You're able to have extended family. We're not going to be Westerners. We turn our parents over to the old folks' home, make a nursery home for our parents and their parents out of the house, right, who do what they are doing. How they're the same way they destroyed marriage, now destroy the relationship between parents and children. We're not that essential. So loyal, serving, helping, assisting, that's great. But at the same time, should we live in the house with the parents? If you can and observe the rights of Allah, then there's more to wobble. But the scholar said he recommends you live separately. It's just easier to live separate. You can observe everybody's rights in that. Separately in this fashion, I'll explain what I mean. What happens is that your wife has a need to dress up and look good. There's something like that. If she's in the house with your dad, it's going to be a little bit difficult for her to dress up, which is a basic emotional need you had and she had. Sometimes in some cultures, the concept is that the girl becomes a daughter for the mother-in-law. They normally make a lot of jokes, men make a lot of jokes about their mother-in-law, but normally in the relationship, that's not much of a problem. Normally, the problem happens sometimes is between the girl and the mother-in-law. What happens is that, this is for instructions for all of us, nobody has the right to weaken the relationship between these two. Everybody's supposed to be protecting. But Ayatollah Khamenei says, don't make the hearts of these two young people bad with one another. Yeah, your wife, she doesn't do this. She doesn't cook like this. She's like, shaitan. So if we're going to live together, then we have to make sure to observe everybody's rights, which means I need to make a space or provide a way for my wife to go over and take care of her needs, which I also have need for. If we're going to live separately, it doesn't mean not being loyal to the parents, visiting the parents, coming and talking to the parents, but it's a little bit easier for you to observe everybody's rights. If you have, let's say, if you have brothers, for instance, if you have brothers, then the wife is not mahram to those brothers. She has to observe in hijab with those brothers. So what happens sometimes is you have a situation where the girl is wearing hijab 24/7. It can happen, but to give your marriage a chance of success, plan for that. You know, people get a little apartment or whatever, but a little room for this person to be able to express themselves and take care of themselves. So if there is a dispute between the parents, you have to observe everybody's rights, which means you observe the rights of your parents and your thing. According to Khamenei, it's not wajib to obey your parents. Sometimes what happens in some cultures, the custom is that I, as your parents, I am second to God. Whatever I say has to be done. And I'm still trying to exercise this after you've gotten married. The advice from ulama is that don't think after you get married, I have to, any decision that I make in the house, I've got to go ask mom or dad. You and the husband make a decision. Oh, what color should the curtains be? Let me call up my sister, call up my mom. My mom has to, you and your husband or your wife. So everybody in this family has a responsibility of trying to protect the family, and nobody should be trying to weaken that relationship. Okay. There's one last thing. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the values that it's good for us to have in order to have a successful marriage. We talked before, up until now, about skills. Even though these were based on taqwa and these are skills that we have to be observing on a continual basis, consistently, in order to have a successful marriage. Let's talk just briefly, because time is up, just briefly about some of the values that can keep a marriage going. One of them is this: being pleased with Allah's decision. What we're taught in the hadith is that before you get married, do research, check, this, that, and the other. But after you get married, try to stay together. I said the reason for marrying in the beginning of the lecture was to try and take one another to paradise. Why did we marry? To take one another to paradise. When Amir al-Mu'mineen was asked to describe Hazrat Fatima, he said that نِعْمَ الْعَوْنِ عَلَىٰ طَاعَةِ اللَّهِ, an excellent helper when it comes to the obedience of Allah. When we're consistently observing those rights of the other spouse, that allows that person to advance spiritually, to go on, because they're not distracted by these needs which Allah has placed in them. So let's marry for that. And let's be pleased with Allah's decision once we've gotten married. Instead of saying, what if? The Prophet of Allah would never say, what if? After it's happened, be happy. This is your lot in life. Try and make it happen. The other thing is gratitude. Really appreciating the person for all that they do. Normally people don't do this. They don't appreciate it. They take the other spouse for granted. Another thing which is there, which is slightly difficult to do, but it's important, is the idea of independence. What I mean by that is that there's some people, when you go into a marriage, I expect to be served. I expect to be served. So I'm a husband, I come home, and I expect that, you know, my chai should be brought to me. I come down, I sit down, where's the chai? Turn on the remote, I want to be served. And that's good if that happens. Remember we talked about that wife who was so wonderful, she's going to get the good tidings of heaven. She comes and she meets her husband, she walks him from the door, she's quick to do that, and the reward for that. So remember, now, from when we look at our spouse, we want to do everything that we should be doing, but now how do I look at, or what do I expect from my spouse myself? It's wonderful if they do that. I'm not discouraging brothers or sisters from serving their spouse. That's great if you're going to do that. We have hadith both for the men and the women who do that. But should I expect to be served? Expect that my wife, let me give you an example now, Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini was somebody who wouldn't even ask his wife for anything. Sometimes he would get up, he'd be sitting there, even with his children, he would just get up and go and pour chai for himself. And they would be so surprised, like, Imam Khomeini, say something, we would love to do that. And they should, and they would. But when it came to his wife, he wouldn't ask his wife to do anything. He had so much respect for his wife. He said that when it came time to dinner, he would sit on the table and he would wait until his wife came. Everybody else would start eating, he would just sit and he would wait until she came. If she was away, they couldn't get Imam Khomeini to stop frowning. When she was there, so much respect. Then they said, sometimes he would need to ask. So what happens is, sometimes when I ask, I say, can you get me some water? Get me some water, please. A command. What would Imam Khomeini say? He'd be like, is there any water available? This is important from an akhlaqi point of view. Not ordering others around. So one is that I don't expect it. I try and take care of myself. And again, remember the idea of trying to marry somebody who has top was important, because if they're the kind of person who's going to take advantage, it's going to be a little bit tough, right? But do internally, I expect, you've done wrong because you haven't brought chai for me. You didn't respect me, you didn't, causes a lot of problems. But if I don't expect those things, I try to take care of what I can myself. If the other person does it, I really appreciate that. That kind of independence is what I'm talking about. But Imam Khomeini, let me mention one more point about Imam Khomeini also, though. When Imam Khomeini would come and he would see that, for instance, his wife is bringing food and the mother is going and bringing it, the children are sitting, what? Your mother's bringing food? Go help her! Then your mom bring the food? Assist? Help! So I'm not saying from that side, you know, yeah, you know, my kid, the kids hear this and they're like, yeah, mom, kick back. No, bring the kids, serve dad, serve mom, right? But the expectations that I have for myself, I don't mean not giving chores and responsibilities, of course that's going to be there, but the idea of I'll sit back and everybody should be serving me, that's what I mean by independence. One last point now about lavish weddings. This is a problem in some communities. In some communities, unfortunately, you'll find that some of the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt are ignored. And I expect that as the young generation of Muslims and soldiers of Imam Zaman, we can go and start to correct some of these wrongs. One of them is this. People give these heavy, heavy dowries. The hadith of the Ahlul Bayt say that a heavy dowry can cause enmity and hatred between the husband and wife. So one is we don't get married because we can't afford it. And I was sitting at, there was one wedding happening, and the groom, they were announcing how much the nikah. $30,000. Ridiculous. Brothers and sisters, we have to have mercy on ourselves, on one another. If you are from a wealthy background and you can afford it, don't do it. If you're a girl, don't demand it. Say, no, I want to be like the Prophet of Allah. I want to be like Hazrat Fatima. That's what I'm looking for. Break the sunnah. What they do, this is in the Islamic Republic of Iran, amongst the people who are not so religious or unfortunately not following the Ahlul Bayt on this, they compete with one another. How many gold coins did you get married for? Oh, I've got to get married for this many. Why do we have these heavy dowries? I have it so, God forbid, my husband goes back, then I can have this backing. First, he won't dare to divorce me because I'll take him to court. I'll get my money. You know what happens? Unfortunately, when there's some people who do this. They marry, but I have, for instance, I'll get married, but I've got to have a job as protection to fall back. I'm going to get married, but I've got this heavy dowry to protect me in case something goes wrong. When you're getting married, you're supposed to be in love with the person. You're supposed to be trusting the person. If you start your marriage based on the idea of fear and not trusting, this is a bad person. What kind of marriage is that? How can you feel happy in that? You're supposed to feel secure in marriage. Now, it's true, there's a fear factor when you're getting married. I don't know this person. People are different after the relationship starts. I don't know who I'm dealing with. That's why we say to marry the person who has taqwa. If you've done that, this is a verse of the Quran. Whoever has taqwa, Allah will, whoever trusts in Allah, Allah will be sufficient for them. Whoever has taqwa of Allah, Allah will make a way out for them. But this way of marrying is the way of wolves. They say about wolves that when they sleep facing one another, nose to nose. Right? If the other wolf wants to attack, then I'll be ready to attack. Some people are like that in marriage. I've got this backup plan. The 45 is right under the fiddle. Instead of love, instead of trust, right? Whereas that's capable if we're going to do this thing based on love. So it's heavy dowries, that kind of stuff. Just throw that out the window. That's not the way of the Ahlul Bayt. If we can't afford it, don't do that. The other thing is lavish weddings. Even if you can afford it, the other people start trying to compete because you did it. Did you hear about X? His wedding, they went to this hotel, and when I do my wedding, I'm gonna... So the community suffers. People don't get married. It's a competition. Is there a law involved in that in any way? Marriage gets delayed? I was talking to a young man, again, this is in the Islamic Republic of Iran. He said that for the wedding night, we have to go and rent out this one place and have food and invite, you know, 200, 300, 400 people. He said, for the wedding night, I've got to pay 5 million tumans. This guy is like driving a taxi here and there. He doesn't even have the money to get married. And he'll start his marriage in debt because of the lavish way. Some people are like, no, I've got to have it this way. My friends had it that way. This is my, I only get to get married once. This is my, I've been thinking about this from the time I was 13, girls. So I'm going to have this kind of a wedding. No, brothers, be strong. Sisters, don't demand that. Be simple. Do the way of the Prophet of Allah. Have mercy on our own youth. Don't you, as a role model for other youth, continue this wrong trend. You be brave. People might talk about you, oh, wow, your wedding was so simple. Let that happen, and let people start to feel brave to go back to the sunnah of the Prophet of Allah. Okay. Jazakum Allah khairan for listening. We're going to end now with my part. If there's any questions, and I'd be happy to answer them. If not, then, you know, that's okay. Also, we'll end with salawat.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.